Why'd you take your headphones off?
Oh my God, it's assaulting to my ears. I hate that style of music. Of all the music that I hate, and there's a long list, metal, death, I like metal, but death metal like that is just my, I hate it. I'm turning that down. God, the worst. And set to Jingle Bells, an abomination.
Old School Movie Podcast. I'm Mike Auger.
I'm Matt Castro.
We were doing a run of Christmas movies, but...
But the best movie of the year came out.
Yeah, no shit. And who would have thought that it was this movie? So, we are doing a current movie, but we're also doing an old movie, and we're going to be talking about Godzilla Minus Zero and the original Godzilla, which came out in 1952.
Is that the score from this movie?
The current movie, yeah.
The current movie. That's a great score. I listened to bits of it the other day. It's Godzilla Minus One, by the way. And that's important because I'll explain the name. I think it's a stupid name, but in context, it sort of makes sense.
Well, that bit right there is the original Godzilla theme.
Okay.
So that was the first theme. It's kind of a little bit changed, but that was kind of very similar to the 1952 one, and they've played that song throughout most of the Godzillas since then.
I recognize that. I know nothing about Godzilla. And weirdly, this was my idea to see. But I just heard good things and I went, hey, if it's a good movie, I need a break from Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Let's go see some Godzilla.
Well, the reason why we went to go see this, 97% on Rotten Tomatoes critics.
Yeah.
98% audience scores.
Yeah.
Do you have the early numbers for this?
Yeah, I do. So the box office to date, or at least as of yesterday, we're recording this on a Friday, was $41 million against a $15 million budget, which is insane because this movie looks like it cost way more than $15 million.
Yes.
That was Brie Larson's hair budget on the Marvels, was $15 million, interestingly. So it's doing really well. And as of yesterday, news had broke that it was going to get a longer U.S. release and an expanded release because the word of mouth and the critic reviews have been really, really good.
Yeah.
And really happy to hear that. And that's why I brought up going to see this, because it was just getting good reviews. I checked Fandango and it said, oh, it's only playing at this, you know, our local theater through Thursday or Friday. And I thought, well, let's jump on it because these days smaller movies just brush in and out of theaters. So I wanted to see it. And I'm so glad we did. We saw it in IMAX, which is a proper use of IMAX.
This movie is incredible.
Yeah, it's so good.
I grew up with these movies late 80s, early 90s when it had gone full camp at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But the original Godzilla, 1952, not far removed from World War II and the atomic bombs.
Well, it was the only thing I know about Godzilla is that it's an allegory for nuclear destruction.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
Which is great. It's a great setup and terrifying.
There's some similar beats in Minus One compared to the original. But I think this movie focuses more on criticizing the Japanese government, especially as it was in World War II.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole concept behind kamikazes.
Yes. And the idea that life is sort of meaningless and was discarded and thrown away by the government in particular.
Absolutely.
Before we get too into the movie, can we talk about a few trailers?
Yes.
Okay.
I would be remiss if we did not speak of... Here's a difference between...
Yeah.
I said 52. It's 54. I'm sorry. The difference between Japanese and Toho...
Mm-hmm.
Which is the original company that produced Godzilla and the legendary shared monster verse we're seeing now. We just watched a trailer for Godzilla X Kong. What's it called? Frozen Empire?
I want to talk about Frozen Empire, but Godzilla X Kong Rise of the Kongiverse? I don't know. Oh, the new empire. Godzilla and Kong already fought in the last movie, right? It was just like Godzilla versus Kong?
Well, it's standard fare. They fight They have two fights. Godzilla beats the shit out of him, basically, in the first fight. Then in the second fight, Kong kind of gets the upper hand a bit, and then they have to team up, naturally.
Of course they do.
Because a Mecha Godzilla is created, and then they kind of fist bump at the end and go about their separate ways.
Okay, well, that sounds terrible.
The 2014 Gareth Edwards Godzilla plays it a little more serious. Mm-hmm. They go completely off the rails in this one. You saw, like, you know, there's laser beams, beams.
I had to shut the trailer off because the whole last half of it was just
alternate dimension.
CGI monsters fighting each other. Yeah. I have no interest in that. We'll get into the movie, but this movie's so great because it takes itself and its characters very seriously. So you actually feel like there's stakes and tension and drama. So that trailer I thought looked terrible. But I also wanted to just mention all the trailers before the movie we saw looked so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood must be in a world of hurt after the strikes and whatnot. They're just pumping out whatever now.
Yeah.
We saw trailers for The Beekeeper, which Jason Statham movie, whatever. Aquaman, which looks terrible. We saw a trailer for Argyle with Henry Cavill, the spy movie.
We haven't talked about Argyle.
No, we have not. And we should.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of excited for it.
Right.
Obviously, he could be the next James Bond. He's not going to because he's going to be 50 by the time they get around to making it. But he could be. That looks pretty good. The worst one by far, though, was Arthur the King, the Mark Wahlberg dog movie that looked like a trailer for a fake movie. Yeah, your wife will enjoy this one because it's got a dog in it. Yes. Looked awful.
Now, first of all, it says it's based on a true story.
Okay, sure it is.
Yeah.
In the same way The Exorcist is based on a true story.
Yeah. So basically the dog is like his guiding light through this big race he's doing.
It's
and
like
then,
an 800-mile race.
Yeah.
Across South America. It's ridiculous. It looked terrible.
We did see a trailer for Frozen Empire, which we've talked about on here before.
I wanted to talk about
it. Do you have some follow-up thoughts on this?
I do, because I'd like to rescind every nice thing I said about that trailer, because I think I was mildly defensive of it at the time.
Yeah.
And every time I see it now, it looks worse and worse.
Yeah.
The premise does look kind of interesting, so we'll see. I'm not going to judge a whole movie on a trailer, obviously, but it just looks so bad. And to kind of tie back into Godzilla, Frozen Empire does a thing twice that this Godzilla movie doesn't do, which this Godzilla movie takes itself very seriously. It's very earnest and sincere, which I think makes it work. Much like The Exorcist, which I think works because everybody's taking it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Twice in that stupid Ghostbusters trailer, you get Patton Oswalt and Paul Rudd's character doing the now classic, like Marvel style humorous reaction to a non-humorous thing where something scary or very serious happens and they undercut it with a stupid joke or a reaction shot. It's not even a joke. Mm-hmm. You get Patton Oswalt saying like, "Isn't this awesome?" or Paul Rudd just cackling at the sight of a scary ghost when he should be taking it seriously.
Yes.
And that's the sort of stuff that we're all sick of. It's that dumb Marvel humor that everyone's done with. Like, James Gunn is the worst at this. And I like James Gunn, but every serious beat in his Guardians movies, I haven't seen the third yet, has to undercut it with a joke every time. And it gets so old.
Yeah.
This wonderful movie does not do that. It takes itself very seriously, and that makes it work.
Yeah. The old movie moves at a neckbreak pace. And like, it seems like Godzilla attacks the people of Japan, you know, 8 to 10 times, smaller increments. They don't reveal him, though, until maybe like halfway through the film, but you're seeing the destruction. They do that in the 2014 Godzilla. It's the same thing.
Okay.
You
see Godzilla immediately in this movie.
Yes.
So at least then he disappears for a while. He disappears for like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But you immediately understand the stakes and the tension and understand that threat is out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have the main character's name?
Yes. And before I go any further, I should say we're going to mispronounce a whole lot of Japanese names
today.
Yes,
we are.
So I pretty much already did the stats. I did want to mention the director, Takashi Yamazaki, written, directed, and did the visual effects. Apparently, he is like a visual effects Wiz supervisor. That's kind of his thing, which really shows because they did a lot with the budget they had.
They had major concerns he could pull this off.
Really?
Yeah. And they after Shin Godzilla, which was a pretty big hit too, they didn't know where they were going with this, and they didn't want to make another one unless they had a clear direction and something they thought had potential.
Well, this potential was lived up to with this one.
So they went back to the basics, and this is the end days of World War II.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the movie. Well, I guess I'll give the movie opens on the character's name is Shikishima, Koichi Shikishima.
Mm-hmm.
He's listed as a former kamikaze pilot, which I'm so sorry. It's kind of a funny way of putting it.
Yeah.
Like most former kamikaze pilots, no longer with us. But yeah, closing days of World War II, and you immediately get the sort of raging debate amongst the people. He is a kamikaze. He lands his fighter jet on an island for repairing kamikaze planes.
Mm-hmm.
And the repairman immediately sets out that there's really nothing wrong with his plane. He wimped out.
Yep.
And then that struggle, that like guilt versus honor versus duty thing strikes up. He has people on the island saying basically, well, how dare you? You should have killed yourself, which was, yes, very much the Japanese mentality at the time. But then you have other people who are saying, why waste a life? This war's over. We all know who's going to win, which was also true. There's a notion that we talked about this on our Oppenheimer podcast. There's a notion that was sort of just been ingrained into history that every single Japanese person was going to fight to the death for their emperor. And that's not true.
Yeah.
Some would have for sure. But for the most part, the war was over. The people were dying and suffering and starving. And so you immediately get this kind of battle, this ethical battle. And then that's when Godzilla shows up.
Right. And I mentioned to Matt, I go, this is a different take because he's not as big as he should be here. He's kind of like maybe, let's say, 12 feet tall.
Yeah, he's a really big lizard.
15, 20 max, mm-hmm. But he, you know, he's still wrecking shit.
Yeah, well, he was small enough to where the plan is there. You know, they all get cornered by him, and the head guard, Tachibana, who's going to come back later in the movie.
The mechanic,
the head mechanic. Sorry, yeah. They're all mechanics. They're not soldiers. He says to Shikishima, I'm probably mispronouncing that name again. Sorry.
That's right.
You know, go get in your plane. You've got a 20 millimeter gun. That'll probably take him on.
Right.
He gets in the plane and he just freezes. He can't shoot him. He chokes in these moments. I hope he has a redemption arc later. and so, you know, add that onto his guilt for later in the movie. Now he's got survivor's guilt and he feels like he didn't do his duty, and Godzilla kills almost everyone else on the island except for Tachibana, the head mechanic.
Yeah, those are the only two that survive. And then
who is not understanding, Tachibana like beats the shit out of him for not firing upon Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Godzilla goes away. We don't see him again for a while.
Not for a long time.
No, we move to Tokyo. Now we're post-war.
Yeah, and you're seeing the damage from all the bombing.
Well, I wanted to talk about that.
Kind of the defeated mentality of the Japanese people. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people have lost loved ones. Even his neighbor basically like kind of disowns him and says, you're a disgrace.
Well, because he's a kamikaze pilot. Right. He's not supposed to come back.
Right.
Again, it's that honor thing. You asked me this in the theater. Where were the nuclear bombs dropped? It was Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah.
I didn't know there were other parts. Because they were not in those two locations.
No, they were in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Tokyo wasn't just bombed, it was firebombed.
Okay.
Because we quickly figured out that Japanese cities were mostly built out of paper. Like, you know, you've seen the paper houses.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we just lit it on fire, it would just burn. And so the firebombing of Tokyo went on for quite a while, and it is estimated to have killed between 80,000 and 130,000 people, which is actually more people than died in the immediate fallout from the nuclear weapons being dropped. So that was actually a more destructive campaign that we went on. I read a book about it called Flyboys when I was in high school. It was really interesting. But it was brutal. And the scene, this movie did such a good job of painting the picture of just a destroyed city, families torn apart. Shikishima eventually creates this kind of very untraditional family with a woman who he meets in the street and a baby that's not hers that she just sort of adopted because the mother died. And it just sets this bleak, miserable tone immediately.
Yeah, and then in the original one, there's no mistake about it. The commentary is strictly on hydrogen bomb testing and how if we keep developing these weapons, we're going to have things like Godzilla.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point. I mean, this movie isn't even remotely subtle about that connection.
Yeah, then in the original, they basically hypothesized that Godzilla was living in caves in the ocean with other prehistoric creatures that no one knew about. Due to all the underwater H-bomb testing, it basically destroyed his habitat, and now he's pissed.
Yeah.
And that's why he's attacking Japan and the boats and everything else.
I was going to say, I didn't even know that, but I was going to say in this movie, Godzilla just comes off as very anti-war. He got bombed, he's pissed off about it, and he starts destroying naval vessels.
Yeah, they just do a quick cut of an H-bomb test, and then you see Godzilla's eye open, and that's really all you see.
Yeah, oh, I want to talk about that too, because... Yeah. Look, when we started this podcast, never did I think I would get to talk about this much World War II history, but I'm thrilled that I get to.
In a Godzilla movie.
So I'm going to take advantage of it while I can. The test site that they showed was, that was one of the Bikini Atoll H-bomb test sites, which was one of the most infamous nuclear bomb tests ever that took place in the Marshall Islands between, I think... It was like 1946 and 1958, where we ended up doing 67 nuclear tests in these islands, rendering a lot of it uninhabitable. To this day, you still can't really live on the Bikini Atoll. We had to relocate the people who were living there. Not that that bothered us. And that was a test that people like Oppenheimer and scientists from the Manhattan Project and a number of politicians were saying, we don't need to be doing this. This is silly. The stated goal of that test was to study the effects of nuclear weapons on ships. And all the scientists were like, you don't need to test that. We know what the effect on ships are. We can do this cheaper, safer, better, faster in a laboratory. But bomb goes boom is fun. And so we drop bomb. And that was a really famous test. And yes, that is where Bikini comes from.
The original Godzilla was inspired by the Lucky Dragon incident. Are you familiar with this?
I don't know what that is, no.
So it's where the crew of a Japanese fishing boat was contaminated by radioactive fallout from the Castle Bravo test, the detonation of the first hydrogen bomb. Hmm. This generated much controversy in Japan, especially after the death of the ship's radio man, Kubayama Akichi. This served as a major influence on the film, with the original script making the connection even more explicit by opening on a scene in which a contaminated boat ominously arrived on shore with the entire crew missing.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I can't imagine why the Japanese would be a little pissy about nuclear testing.
We're listening to the score in the background here for Minus Zero. I cannot tell you how fucking masterful this score is with this movie.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good.
It feels very old-fashioned. It's very orchestral. It works in the old theme. I really dug it. Even during the movie, and I think I've said this, that normally the first time I see a movie, I hear the score, but that's not what I'm paying attention to, and it's the second time that I kind of can get into it. With this, I kept noticing the score. Because what helped was this movie is in Japanese.
Yeah.
I don't think we've mentioned that yet.
Yeah.
So you have to read subtitles, which is fine. Subtitles are really not that bad to get through. But because I was reading the movie, I could hear everything. Not only did I love the score, the sound in this movie is some of the best sound I've heard in a long time.
Subtitles are not bad when they let scenes play out and give time to breathe.
Well, that's true, too.
And that was the important thing in this. I think most of the dialogue, they kind of lay this out into four big action pieces. Mm-hmm. And in between that is really compelling dialogue and character development. Because... we have our hero, who, what the fuck's his name again?
Shigeshima.
He has this makeshift family, but he doesn't want to allow himself to be happy. He feels like his war's not over. He's living with the guilt of not only not fulfilling his duty as a kamikaze pilot, but he froze up and Godzilla killed all those mechanics on the island.
Yeah, he has severe everything. PTSD, survivor's guilt, abandonment issues.
Yeah.
compounding that with the fact that, like everybody else, his whole family's dead, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
His neighbor, was that supposed to be his sister? It kind of felt like they were sort of family, or at least close.
I don't know.
I couldn't tell.
Neighbor or aunt or...
I don't know. Look, there was some, even with subtitles, there's some stuff that was probably lost in translation on us.
Yeah.
Just because it's a Japanese movie, we don't know that culture.
The CGI in this film is better than what we just saw in that $200 million trailer for Godzilla and Kong.
Yeah, it is.
This movie cost $15 million.
Right, which is wild. There's maybe a few wonky CGI moments.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when your movie's this good and when your characters are compelling...
It's forgivable.
It's forgivable because you don't need things to be perfect. Godzilla can have some wonky scales on his back and you're like, well, whatever, everything else is really good.
Yeah.
If you're enjoying the movie, generally, you're going to forgive some little stuff. And that's how I felt.
I want to talk about a man by the name of Haru Nakajima. So, unlike the 50s, there was no CGI. And they didn't want to do claymation.
That would be so funny.
They had a man in a rubber suit. And this poor fucking bastard, he passed out several times because the suit got up to 140 degrees Fahrenheit with all the studio lights.
Holy shit.
He took so much abuse. I think he was like lit on fire with some of the pyrotechnic explosions too. There was like explosions going on all around him being in the suit.
Oh, wow.
Like just... Fuck, this poor guy, like I said, went through just hell to, you know, portray Godzilla back in those days.
It's funny, though, because that's now become... And this Godzilla is 100% CGI, which is fine. It looks great. But Godzilla has become so synonymous with Man in a Rubber Suit. It's part of its charms, for the older ones, at least.
Oh, yeah. Especially, like I was telling you, maybe we'll go through some of these down the road, too.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They're a ton of fun. And like I said, this original film is a dark tone. There shows people dying in the hospital.
Oh, yeah. No.
Babies crying. The same with Minus Zero. Both of them have a really dark tone.
Yes, it leans into its darkness because it's a dark subject matter.
Yeah.
It's about nuclear destruction. That's not light and funny and silly. I understand it became that, but this movie really... really leans into it, and I think it's better for it. Okay, I haven't explained the name. Do you know the meaning behind the name?
Godzilla?
Yeah, no, minus one.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So it's basically Japan, they felt they were already starting at zero because they'd been so destroyed,
mm-hmm.
and then this fucking monster shows up and destroys them even more.
Just when the country can't be any more fucking destroyed.
Yeah, so then we're minus one. We're starting from less than zero. The name, when I first read the name, I was like, that's a stupid-ass name. When you understand what it means, it works. It's really interesting.
Yeah. 2 years go by after he's kind of got this makeshift family and mm-hmm. they're kind of running out of money. So he goes to work for like this boating outfit.
It's a minesweeper.
Right. And that's what they're there to do.
Yeah.
And
so
they need a gunman.
They need a gunman because they are out. They said some, I don't remember the number, but it was something crazy. You know, the US and the Japanese laid 150,000 mines in the ocean, something like crazy, during the war. Somebody needs to go out and sweep them all up. And they paid him a lot of money. It's very dangerous work. His wife, we haven't named her yet, Noriko, is his partner in this, that they just kind of meet and form this, you know, yeah, weird family. There's this really funny bit. There are humorous moments in this movie.
Yes.
But it's not dumb comedy. It's just funny moments. There's this great bit where he's explaining to her, like, no, don't worry, I'm gonna be out on this specially outfitted boat specifically designed for minesweeping. It's dangerous, but it's not the war, and it's gonna be fine. And then hard cut to them standing in front of this like wooden tiny little boat. He's like, this is specially outfitted. And then they explain that, like, well, you can't have a metal boat because a lot of the mines are magnetic.
Yeah.
And so you have to have a wood boat, and it's old school. They two boats, trawl line between it. They grab the mines, and then the gunner shoots it.
They kind of have a montage of sorts where they're making good money off of this now.
Yeah. Oh, and the director directly cited Jaws as one of his influence for this movie.
I can see that.
And when I read that, I just thought, like, yeah, no shit. Like, this whole sequence is Jaws.
The first time they discover Godzilla, he's sinking all these ships. they're out there in this dinky boat with a 50 cal and they're seeing like warships sunk and they're like, what the fuck is going on here, right?
Yeah, they discover a they're sent out because they start to track this thing, right? They're like, all these ships have been attacked, and we see this image of a big destroyer just ravaged, but it's not sunk. It looks like somebody punched it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good visual.
So the first time we see Godzilla now, who's grown because of all the nuclear testing.
Because of the Marshall Island tests.
Yeah.
Yeah. We moved past that shot pretty quickly, but it is a really funny shot. And it feels like a very old-fashioned shot where you just get General MacArthur, Marshall Islands, nuclear bomb, and then just like a flash of Godzilla looking really angry.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's like, oh, I love this. This is so great. There's no like extended sequence of him growing. He's just angry.
Yes.
Godzilla's mean in this too. This is a mean Godzilla.
When we get our first glimpse of like true Godzilla, it is a fucking horror movie at this point.
Oh yeah.
And it is so ass puckering tense because they see all these deep sea fish, and he knew this from when he encountered him on the island 2 years ago, popping up. And then you see Godzilla chasing this boat, and you see his fucking mouth open, just going at them, right? And they're throwing mines at him, and he's just regenerating like immediately.
Yeah.
Finally.
It feels tense. It feels scary.
Oh, absolutely.
One thing I like about this, though, because what helps the tension is Godzilla is not fast. I don't know how Godzilla moves in other movies, but he's not particularly fast in this.
No.
He feels like a guy in a rubber suit because he's kind of lumbering around.
Yeah.
But that's great because that means there can be tension. If Godzilla can just run 120 miles an hour, there's no tension. He's going to kill everybody. This Godzilla, he moves a little slowly. He kind of lumbers. When he does his fire breath, he has to like regenerate from it, so he can't just do it all the time.
Yeah.
It creates stakes and moments.
He, this like warship comes in at the last minute and kind of saves the little boat because they shoot him with everything they've got. And he just swims underneath, comes out, and just fucking wrecks everything around him. It's incredible.
Well, we find out the little boat was sent out as a decoy, like as a distraction.
Yeah.
Basically, keep Godzilla busy until the warship shows up.
Right.
And again, playing into that theme of the Japanese government just does not value life. They'll just throw you out there to distract this guy until we can get the real army out. This is going to come up later because we get like five big motivational speeches in this, but my favorite is the last one.
Yes.
The let's value life speech.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. But that's going to be, this is all going to be relevant.
So when he comes back to shore, for lack of a better term, it's not his wife, but the girl he's living with, she's like, you know, why don't you tell me what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. So he finally reveals that he encountered this monster. The monster's back. It's grown. And there's this huge emotional scene where he's questioning, am I dead and I'm just living in hell now? Like, I've already died and none of this is real and blah, blah, blah. And she has to like reassure him that this is real. This family is real.
You know? Yeah, he's had like a breakdown. Yeah. He's having a full mental breakdown.
Right.
Am I dead? Did I die? Am I being punished? Like, it's, and none of it is silly or light.
Not
it
at
is
all.
Really dark, and it's taken very seriously. You know, even when he tells people about Godzilla, they never make a joke. It's never like, oh, you must be crazy.
No,
it's like, oh my God, oh, this is serious.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing. We don't know Japanese, but the actors are doing such a great job of delivering dialogue and emoting that it's like, we know this is good acting and they're really shining.
Good acting is good acting.
Absolutely.
And this was phenomenal. This is one of those movies you could probably watch with the sound off entirely and you'd still be able to figure out what's going on.
I am going to have to knock it for something though.
Okay.
I didn't see a lot of diversity.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. Damn it. The second you said it, I went, I know where this is going. That's true. Tokyo was not an ethnically diverse place in this movie.
Where were the strong female leads?
Well, that's the thing. She is a strong female lead.
Yes.
This is a great example. We talk about this all the time. This is a great example of how to do a really great female lead. She's taking care of a baby. She's making it on her own. Then she moves in with this guy, but not romantically. They are forming a cohabitation.
Did they ever... I couldn't tell if, like, they were kind of hooking up on the side, but they didn't couldn't commit. Or,
I didn't think so.
I didn't either.
I didn't think... I did not get that
sense. I think
the
tension was there and the implication, but they never really pulled the trigger on it.
We find out at the end, spoilers, that despite going through some things, they get together at the end, and she sort of professes... Or they both profess that, like, hey, we knew there was something going on here, but you couldn't move on, and now we can be together.
We'll jump back because I feel like the way we're breaking this down kind of needs to be told linearly.
It does. Yeah, it does.
However, the way they're setting up this movie to end is like one of the darkest movies I've ever seen.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
we'll get there. Right. But
specifically because there's a child involved. Just remember all of that.
And that child actress was great too.
She was really good. But no, I always got the sense that they were very much a platonic couple.
But they wanted to take it to the next level, but
he had too many demons.
Yeah.
But to go back to her, you know, she is very much in charge of herself.
Yeah.
She, as soon as she can, she says, hey, I'm getting a job. I'm going to be in this city that turns into Godzilla rubble at some point, but I'm getting a job here. They're rebuilding it super fast. So like, this is just to put a pin in the diversity thing. This is how you do strong characters.
Well, and here's my take on this too. Number one, they're telling a story that is in the 40s.
Yeah, it's 1946.
Okay.
In Japan.
Things were different, right?
Yes.
They are showing strength in a lot of the female characters. The neighbor too, how mm-hmm. she, you know, kind of takes charge of the child. Those are also strengths. Like those that can be shown in a film. The mothering, the nurturing, you know, I consider those strengths.
How dare you?
Well, exactly.
Those right? are actually weaknesses.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they rewrite history here?
Why didn't she punch Godzilla in the face?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And then say, that's how we do it.
Fuck this movie.
That's how we do recording. It lady style. No,
but that's just it. You know, like she wasn't necessarily they were dependent on each other.
Right.
You know, because she did like move into his house. Mm-hmm. Like, basically told him, I'm staying here with this child. But it wasn't like he didn't need her either. Like, she kind of saved his life. You know what I mean?
She kept
him... she quite literally saves his life in a part we're going to get to.
That is true. But she also clearly was keeping him from eating a bullet.
100%.
Because that guy had massive PTSD and would have checked out quickly if had he not had her around. I think he even says that at one point. He confesses that, like, you pretty much, you know, you saved me. Yes, this is a great example of how to write strong characters.
So she's got a job in the city now. Mm-hmm. Bad for her because Godzilla shows up now and now he's made landfall.
Yeah, this is one scene where I like the suspension of disbelief was removed a little bit purely because Shikishima is at home with the daughter, with the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he hears on the radio.
And then he appears.
Yeah, he appears like Batman. Like he's just there. That's an extremely minor nitpick. Before we get to this scene, I do want to point out a scene that I loved. Right before this, there's a bit where the boating family, the mine sweeping crew, has become very close. All the guys have become really close.
All those guys are great too.
They're all so good.
And the chemistry is off the charts. They're all very likable characters.
Yep, and every one of them was a veteran except for one who was really young. He's a kid. He's like 17.
Right.
And they're having dinner at Shikishima's house, and something comes up where it's like, oh, I would never look at Noriko. Yeah, Noriko. I would never look at her because she's married. And then he says, well, no, we're not married. And they're almost all outraged. Like, what? What is this? What is this living situation? And I'm not an expert in 1940s Japanese social mores, but I'm pretty sure that this would have been seen as like a scandalous living situation.
Because they're living together, right?
Well, they're living together with a baby that isn't even theirs and they're not even romantically interested. They're all just cohabitating. But it just sets this interesting dynamic and very different dynamic that you don't see.
The more we're talking about this movie, like, goddamn, this movie is fucking great, dude.
It's great. I don't know if it's my favorite movie of the year, but I think it is. And I will tell you this: it is absolutely the movie that came out this year that I am most likely to rewatch again.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, this is rewatchable.
I'm debating taking my kids to watch this tomorrow, and there's a big part of me morally that's saying don't do that. There's another part of me morally that's saying, you know what, maybe I should, you know?
Yeah.
You teach him a thing. And my younger son loves Godzilla. Mm-hmm. Well, he did at some point, but.
Well, and this is not like the worst thing in the world for sure. I also wouldn't necessarily call it a kid's movie.
No.
It deals with some pretty heavy subject matter.
No, but I will say this. Every time Godzilla shows up, it's fucking amazing.
Yeah, well, that's why this movie's so interesting, because you can enjoy it as a Godzilla monster movie. You can enjoy it as a like post-war psychological drama.
Yeah.
And it's a World War II movie, which we know checks my boxes. So
it's also a horror movie.
It is genuinely frightening.
Godzilla is terrifying in this.
Yeah, Godzilla is not cuddly or cute or an anti-hero or anything like that. He just sucks. He's just there for chaos and destruction.
When he makes landfall, I mean, he is just fucking wrecking this place.
Well, that brings us back to the Noriko being in the city, going to her job, and then Big Godzilla finally makes landfall and just fucking wrecks the city.
And one of the most terrifying scenes in the movie is everybody's kind of running and they stop because Godzilla is now looking the other, because the military is now shooting Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
He looks the other direction and all of a sudden his spine starts coming out and lighting up. And me as an old Godzilla fan, I'm like, oh, just like Paul Rudd. Here we go.
This is going to be epic.
Shoots that atomic breath. But in this one now, it almost causes like a nuclear explosion.
I think it's supposed to be a nuclear explosion. It's the same sort of thing. Like goes quiet, big flash, then you get the explosion. I think Godzilla's breath is a nuclear bomb in this.
So,
and it's really effective.
And then you've got the windfall after, right?
Which is also a nuclear bomb thing.
So that starts blowing everybody away. And then
Noriko
pushes our hero.
Shikishima.
Out of the way into an alley, and she gets blown away, and I'm like, oh fuck, she's dead.
She doesn't, let's set this, just to drill in on this, it's not like a gust of wind hits her.
No, she goes flying like 100,000 feet in the other direction.
She should be splat.
There's no doubt she's dead.
100%.
Right.
Spoiler alert, maybe not so much, but in the moment, we're like, oh, they really fucking killed her.
Right.
Yeah, she is very dead.
So now Shikishima, did I say that right?
Shikishima, yeah. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but that's how it's spelled.
He is...
I feel like I should be eating sushi for this or something.
Oh my God, you went there.
Well, I'm trying to read all these names over here. I don't know how to speak Japanese.
That's why I suggested Hibachi Grill tonight.
Oh, that would have been great.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Anyhow, after this, he's severely depressed. And now he's on a mission to... in Godzilla's life and his own.
Yeah, so we find out that one of the crew members on the boat that he was on, the minesweeper boat, we knew he was a doctor. He kind of said like, oh, I worked for Japanese naval weapons during the war. But then we find out that he's the Dr. Mengele of Japan, apparently. Not in that way, but like he's a very high-ranking doctor who made all these plans and weapons and stuff.
Right.
And he comes up to him and says something like, I mean, he basically gives the Nick Fury line of, so we're putting a team together. And I was fully expecting it to go the full schlock, but it actually doesn't. And it's very kind of sweet. And it says, their whole thing is, this movie hates the circa 1946 Japanese government, which makes sense because at the time it would have basically been America installing a new government because they lost their old government in the war as part of the surrender terms. And they were just rebuilding everything. They were would have been pretty useless. So they say, hey, look, the government isn't going to do anything for us. They're not coming to save us. They're a mess. They barely have a military. All our ships are gone, but we've negotiated to have some of our cruisers returned and we're putting together a team of civilians to go out and take care of this on our own because they're not going to help us. Do you want in?
So, I had seen something about Jet Jaguar making a reappearance in the Toho franchise. So at this point, I was like, oh my God, they're going full camp now.
I have no idea who Jet Jaguar is.
Jet Jaguar is basically a giant robot who looks like a Power Ranger.
Oh God, I'm so glad they didn't do
that. So when they started to talk about this top secret project, I'm like, oh fuck.
It's going to be something like that.
I'm so glad they didn't do that.
Yes, because it would have completely undermined the feeling of everything's in rubble. Japan's in rubble. Everything's destroyed. We don't have anything.
Even if you are going to go there in the future, there has to be a development point. There has to be, okay, we know Godzilla's back or he's coming back. We need to have like a Pacific Rim kind of thing where we have to build up a defense for this, right? You can't just all of a sudden, well, Tony Stark built this in a cave with the box.
No,
scraps.
Yeah, exactly. You know? You can't just Deus Ex Machina your way out of this if you're in this type of movie. Because if you go from everything's bad, we're just trying to get by, to actually we have Mechagodzilla hidden away in a bunker.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh, well, then what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Completely
Zordon appears with the Dinozords or something like that.
Don't get me wrong. I would watch that movie.
Well,
just not,
it goes without saying.
Just not in this movie. That's
right. So they come up with this plan to basically sink Godzilla all the way to the bottom. I love this score piece, by the way, playing in the background. It's so good. God damn, I can't say enough good things about this. But anyhow, so they come up with this plan to sink. They're going to take two warships, wrap wire around Godzilla, and attach hydrogen canisters, right? To
was it methadone? Something like that.
Whatever it is, it sinks.
Yeah, so
they're
going to
sink them.
It's a chemical reaction that stops anything from having surface tension with the water. So even though you would think it would make them float, it's actually going to sink Godzilla.
Right.
So the plan is they're going to get Godzilla over this trench. It's super deep. It's like 1,500 meters deep or 5,000 meters deep. I don't remember what it was. I don't do meters. I'm an American. And then they were not only going to sink him and try to crush him with the pressure, which obviously wasn't going to work, but then they were going to rapidly pull him back up to the surface and depressurize him.
Yeah.
So something was like, this guy's got to damage him. Like, we're going to use the sea. It's a great plan. It's not just throw a bomb at Godzilla, which is actually what they end up doing. But
yeah, well, Shikishima says, we got to distract him, so I'll fly an airplane. But secretly, he has sent letters to everybody with the name of that mechanic guy.
Tachibana.
Basically trying to trigger him.
Trying to trigger him because he's trying to find him because he wants to... He's already decided that he's going to kamikaze himself into Godzilla because he learned when they first meet Godzilla in the boat, he's firing a gun into his mouth they were throwing mines.
He blows
mines.
Up one of the mines.
That's
in his
right.
Mouth.
They were throwing mines into his mouth, and he kind of realized that, okay, he's pretty impenetrable on the outside, but on the inside, he's more vulnerable.
Right.
So if I can fly a plane down his throat, I can probably
blow him up from the inside.
So he's gonna check all his boxes. He's gonna get rid of his survivor's guilt by killing Godzilla and avenging the people on the island. He's gonna finish his mission as a kamikaze. He's gonna do it all for glory, and then that'll make him feel better, I guess. So he goes after Tachibana. They provide him with a plane, and not just any plane, but it's like, we found you this experimental jet that we were building at the end of the war. We were gonna use it in our all-out offensive against the Americans, but obviously that never happened and whatever. So there's this. But it's
he said they only made two of them.
Yeah, it was like experimental jet. But it's in pretty bad shape because it's been a couple of years. And you mentioned that, but this movie takes place over like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
there's some good time that elapses, which again I think is helpful. One of my pet peeves with movies like this sometimes is like, wow, all this stuff happened in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
So he goes after Tachibana because he's a mechanic. He's a good mechanic, but he also wants to kind of show him that he's got the stuff.
Right.
And he finds him. He eventually finds him because he writes him letters saying that everything that happened on the island was his fault. So Tachibana tracks him down, beats him over the head, ties him up, and kicks the shit out of him again.
Yep. So in the OG Godzilla, there's a scientist with an eye patch. He creates this thing that basically takes all the oxygen out of surrounding areas. And his name in that movie is Serizawa, which is, in 2014, the same name of, I can't think of his name, but he's a pretty famous Japanese actor. He's the one that plays Serizawa in the Godzilla of 2014 and Destroy All Monsters.
Okay.
He also kind of, now that I'm like watching the OG Godzilla again, which I haven't seen in years, I'm seeing there's so many nods to the original in the legendary films, which I appreciate, but...
Oh, it's Ken Watanabe.
Ken Watanabe.
Who's been in
a ton of shit.
A million things?
Yes. So, they do this deoxygenizer thing, and then the doctor says, I hope you have a good life with your chick. Cuts off his line, he kills himself.
Oh, geez.
In the movie... He says, I've created another weapon of mass destruction. I don't want this getting into anybody's hands because it's just going to be used as a weapon. And even if I only use this one time, it's still in my head and it has to die with me. So that's why he kills himself.
Wow. Okay.
because he's the one that makes this thing, and it melts Godzilla, and it's so funny. It shows the rubberized thing laying there, and then it flashes to a skeleton of it, and then there's nothing there. And that's the end of Godzilla, and that's the end of the movie.
Wow, okay.
So in this one, the mechanic builds the airplane to the specifications that Shigeshima is asking for.
Yeah, he like takes out one of the gas tanks because obviously he's not going to need it.
Yeah.
He fits it with a bigger gun. He fits it with a bunch of bombs.
Yep.
Before this is, because this is all, we get this sort of suit up scene. There's a very good explanation of, like ticking clock that we have. Godzilla attacked once, he retreated, he's going to come back. How long do we have? We don't know. Could be weeks, could be months, but we got to be ready. And it ends up being, I think, like 5 or 6 weeks, something like that. And they finally start to track him and realize, okay, Godzilla's coming back. We can track the radiation. And this is the point. This was actually my favorite part of the movie. I heard some complaints that this was the slow part of the movie. No, I loved this part because every few minutes we're getting great hero speeches. There's like they put the team of men together. We get a great speech from
volunteers because the government
all volunteers.
They do make it a point too that the Americans refuse to help because they don't want Soviet interference.
Right.
They don't want to cause more tension with the Soviet Union.
Oh, there's a dig at the American government too.
Yes.
There's a line where they're literally like, we cannot trust the Japanese government or the United States government. They're bad too. Like, I think I said the director of this must have been whatever the Japanese version of a libertarian is.
Very anti-government.
Very much so.
At least as it was in the late 40s.
Totally. But
post-World War II.
The message was not subtle. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It landed pretty hard with me. But yeah, like every 5 minutes we're getting a great pump-up speech. Like, The there's a captain, he's an older Japanese captain who, you know, ran a warship in World War II, and he's giving this big speech when he's recruiting the men, and the scientist is giving a speech, and he's talking about how, like, hey, you know, you're not soldiers anymore, we've all been through the war, I understand you can leave and go home to your families right now, but our future's on the line, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, it was so great, and I hate to sound so old, but you just don't get this kind of stuff anymore where the heroes are just heroes and the villains are just villains. Everybody now is like morally ambiguous. The heroes can't be too heroic and the villains have to have a point. And it's like, no, Godzilla's bad and the heroes are good. And this was great. You could root for him. I wanted to stand up and cheer in Japanese. I loved it. And my favorite, I alluded to it, was the head scientist finally gives this long speech about how, like, during the war, our government didn't value our lives. So, no, we're not going to go fight to the death. We're all going to go out tomorrow and fight for our future, and we're going to come home to our families, and let's value life. I was like, yes!
Well, one of the best parts is one of the guys that's volunteering goes, is this a mission leading us to certain death?
Yes, right.
And they were like, well, no. And he goes, well, that's already better than the war.
Yeah. Because that was the whole thing, right? Like, the Japanese World War II mentality was, you will fight to the death. And this is like, no, we're fighting for ourselves this time.
For those of you kids out there that have never done any World War II history, the Japanese quite literally had kamikaze pilots, which basically just flew airplanes right into warships and structures and
suicide,
things like that.
Suicide missions.
Suicide missions, yeah.
That's a really good point, actually. I was sitting there thinking when we were watching the movie, and that thought did cross my mind where I was like, do people even know what kamikazes are anymore? I'm sure it's still taught, but still, like, it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder if these bits of history are still being taught in schools.
I don't know.
I mean, my kids are fairly young. My oldest is only in fifth grade. But I feel like in fifth grade, I was starting to learn about things like this. But
totally. Well, I'm never going to find out. So when they get there, let me know. Let me know if they're still teaching World War II.
It's important to learn these things.
It's extremely important. If you can't tell, I love history.
Yeah.
And specifically this era, because I think it's so fascinating.
It is.
But yeah, learning about this stuff is so important to understanding why things are the way they are and why things can be bad again. Look, it's the old adage. If you don't learn history, you're doomed to repeat it. Yeah. And if you do learn it, you're also doomed to repeat it, but then you'll know more at least.
Absolutely.
Because we never learn.
So the final act, the mechanic is like, oh, you got the bomb here and the bomb here. And then Shishima's like, well, before that, we get a scene with his makeshift daughter. Oh. She's crying. She's lost her mother.
Tell you who else is crying.
Yeah. I was getting choked up.
Like a little teary a couple times.
He leaves a bunch of money.
Fucking Godzilla movie.
Yeah. He leaves a bunch of money. and a note for the next door neighbor. Take care of her. Like, he's not coming back, right? So then you see the mechanic go, okay, you're ready. There's just one more thing. And you whisper to him.
Hard cut.
So I'm like, okay, he's showing him the ejection seat.
Yeah.
He's going to live on and be a single parent, right?
The entire third act of this movie.
Very predictable.
Extremely predictable, and I still didn't care. I was so into it. As soon as you get the, oh, and I forgot just one last, because keep in mind too, he's talking, this is Tachibana, the head mechanic, who is basically telling him, you need to kill yourself. You were supposed to be a kamikaze. You should not be here anymore. He hates him.
Yeah.
And then, as soon as you get the, oh, and one last thing, 007, and then it just like the camera pulls out and cuts, you're like, okay, it's the ejector seat. We all know where this is going. And still, I did not care.
God, this score is masterful, dude.
It's very good.
Fucking A. So the final scene, he's flying around, shooting at Godzilla, pissing him off. Hugely intense scene, right?
Yeah.
He shoots his atomic breath. He's recharging. They're like, it's now or never.
Well, and they try the plan of the sinking. It doesn't work.
Right.
Yeah. It works for like a minute.
So they lift him back up and he's just about recharged.
Oh, wait. I got to say one thing about the lifting back up that made me laugh so hard. They're trying to lift him back up after they've sunk him to depressurize him and hopefully kill him.
Yeah.
And the boats that are out can't pull him up. He's like too strong and he's awake again. So he's fighting it. And all of these tugboats appear out of nowhere. And it reminded me of that scene in The Rise of Skywalker where like 100 billion ships show up.
Lando.
Yeah, Lando and like all these to
fight. Or Endgame, on your left.
Yeah, well,
okay. Everybody shows up in portals and demasks because everybody's got to get a face.
Well, you gotta get your face in there. That's the moneymaker. If not, like, how do you know it's the actor?
Yeah, a little cheesy, but.
But it was great. I loved it. Unlike in Rise of Skywalker, which is a terrible movie.
So then we get a scene of a telegram being dropped off to the neighbor. And she's like, got this shocked look on her face. And I'm like, oh my God, she's still alive.
We knew. I think we both knew immediately.
So he flies the plane into Godzilla's mouth right before he shoots the atomic breath. The plane blows up. Godzilla's head explodes and he sinks to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
And vaporizes pretty much. Then you see that Shikishima has parachuted out. And everybody's like saluting them. It's fucking awesome. It reminds me of like old school Independence Day.
Yes,
like,
very much Independence Day.
Yeah.
Okay, so that shot I love. It was maybe my favorite bit in the movie when he flies the plane into Godzilla's mouth because it's so, I don't know, it's so well done. And also you can see him eject. It's really quick, but you can actually see him. I saw it immediately and I was like, okay, yeah. But he doesn't just like fly down Godzilla's throat. He flies in. It's super fast. And Godzilla catches him in his mouth. He like crunches the plane.
Yeah.
And then right before you can see him shoot up and then he explodes.
Yeah.
It just, that shot should look worse considering it's 100% digital. It looked really good. You felt it. You felt the crunch. It sounded really good again. I don't know. It was really good.
So then he gets the message that
Noriko
is still alive.
I don't know how.
And he finds her with the daughter crying and she says, is your war over now? And they start embracing and kissing and a fucking happy ending.
It's a happy ending. And you know what? Okay. She should be dead. And also for somebody who just got vaporized by Godzilla breath, she looked pretty good. Like she had like an eye. She had a little patch over her eye.
Yeah.
She had like no cuts or bruises. She was in makeup. I was like, whatever. But we were so into it at that point. I think we turned to each other even in the movie and just went like, okay, it's whatever. And then you said, I'll allow it. We love a happy ending. I was like, I love a happy ending. It's great.
Well, the thing is, you're rooting for this man to get his peace.
Yeah.
And the way they were setting it up is like, okay, he's going to kill himself. He lost the love of his life. That daughter is going to grow up without her, whoever she knows as parents now, right?
Right. That's the darkest part is now this girl is like triple orphaned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, they're a happy family at the end. And because these characters are so likable and you've grown with these characters, you've been on this journey. It's like, I want to see this happen.
Yeah, even though it's very silly, you want it. You want the happy ending because you root for all of them. They're great, and you want them to be happy.
And then the real happy ending.
Well, of course,
a chunk of Godzilla's meat is floating at the bottom of the ocean, and then it starts regenerating, and it starts playing the classic theme at the end.
Like we knew we had to.
Yes, exactly.
Can't kill Godzilla. Well, this movie's definitely getting a sequel because it's making a lot of money, and it's, I think this is going to have legs. I think it's going to make a lot of money.
Yeah. So the question is now, where do they go in the sequel? Do they have him fight another monster? Do they have him be a terrorist again? Like, where do we go from here?
As we know, I am not a fan of sequels generally, especially with movies as good as this.
Yeah.
This is so good. It's let's put it in that Ghostbusters, Jaws, Halloween camp. A great one-shot deal that was perfect. It needs nothing else. Having said that, money. So what do? You can't make every single Godzilla movie a dark family drama because that will get old too. So you know what? As far as I'm concerned, you've done your great masterpiece of a Godzilla film. Make some schlock. Who cares? Let him fight King Kong. Let him fight Mechagodzilla. Let him fight a big dragon. I don't know. Whatever.
That's great.
I guess he is a big dragon, kind of. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I tend to agree.
Yeah.
Because where do you go from here? Like, I don't know if you can have that kind of serious tone. You could still have a serious tone, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe you just go full slock. Right. But here's the thing. Like, the difference between like this movie and the legendary Godzilla films, the good Godzilla films are always have human characters that you care about. You're rooting for, and you're not rooting for them to die. And I don't think the legendary films pull that off very well at all. I think these characters are annoying in those films. You can't wait for them all to die. You're rooting for the monsters to just fucking squash all of them.
Well, that's what makes any good. I don't care what genre you're making. All great movies need characters you can like and relate to.
Godzilla is not the plot in this movie. He's just a plot device.
Exactly. He's a threat.
Yeah.
The plot is the characters working against the threat.
Absolutely.
The threat could be anything else. It could be a Black Hawk helicopter. It could be Godzilla. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They're working against something, and that's what makes it so good. Also, you know, because technically this movie is a sequel to Shin Godzilla, or at least it was the follow-up to Shin Godzilla.
Right.
But it's not a sequel. So they also seem to be pretty content to just make random one-off Godzilla movies, but make them good.
Right.
Because apparently Shin Godzilla is also great. I've never seen it, but apparently it's wonderful.
I haven't seen it either.
So maybe they just do that. Maybe they keep doing one-offs. But I don't know. Don't ruin this. Don't make a sequel that you don't need. Okay, Mike, was this the best movie of the year, or was it just one of the best movies of the year? This might be my favorite movie I've seen this year.
For me, I think it's the best movie of the year, hands down, but I haven't seen a lot of current movies this year. I just haven't.
Yeah, and I've been getting more and more in. Killers of the Flower Moon is probably still my number one, which was also horribly depressing and soul-shattering, as was this. So those are probably my one and two right now, which, boy, wouldn't have expected that.
No, I can't say enough good things about this movie. It's fucking great. Go see it. The subtitles, work through that, or whatever hangups you have about
It's not that bad.
Put it to the side. If you can see this in IMAX, I definitely recommend that too.
Yeah.
I'm just blown away. I didn't think.
Yeah, and this came out of nowhere. We just threw this idea out and we're like, yeah, whatever. Let's go see Godzilla. Oh, this is amazing.
I didn't think a Godzilla movie would be this incredible, but it is.
It is. Oh, one last thing I wanted to mention. If you're one of those people that was upset that Oppenheimer didn't have the Japanese perspective, just double feature Oppenheimer in this. It's the perfect Oppenheimer sequel.
And then kill yourself when you get home.
And then drink heavily because it's the only way to get happy again.
So the Christmas run continues. We made a little short detour here with Godzilla, but we'll get back on track next week. Follow us, OSM Review, on Instagram, on Threads. We never post on Threads, but we post on Instagram. Download the podcast wherever you can, and we'll see you next week.
Merry Christmas. Climbing through the chimney with a toy gun, robbing all the kids under the Christmas tree. Hey yo, what happened to you? Hey yo, what happened to me? They had 12 little elves helping him with the goods. On Christmas, this happened to everyone in the hood. Got Jack for their gifts when the thing took a hit. Brightest house on the block, smoked up his shit. On the 24th, it gets scandalous. Merry Christmas, Los Angeles. Stuck in the county jail, fucked up holiday.